Hey, so thanks for joining us today. We're about to jump into the Spark Notebook experience. I'm Andrew Mall at Ask the Data on Twitter, and I'm here with Joel Zambrano, who's part of the HD Insight Spark team, and he's here to talk about what he's been working on and what's to come in the notebook experience that we've created here with HD Insight. And Joel, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, Joel Zambrano, as we mentioned, and the HD Insight team working on the notebooks. We have a couple notebooks, mainly Zeppelin and Jupyter, which we'll be talking about today, mostly on Zeppelin. So you want to step it up and tell us a little bit of the agenda for today?
Sure. So we're gonna jump in, and as we keep saying, these notebook experience. So what does that mean? What is a notebook? We're going to talk a little bit about the REPL architecture of a notebook and kind of what that allows you to do that you might not be used to or get in a normal IDE environment. Something kind of new and unique to the HD Insight cluster experience you might be used to. And we're going to go in and talk a little bit more about a HVAC company that makes certain sensors, and these sensors will go ahead and actually gauge the temperature that's within a warehousing building, and we're going to kind of play with that and see how those sensors are actually doing and look at the data of kind of the temperature of that warehouse and what we think the warehouse should actually be temperature-wise, and look at the difference in a couple different countries around the world.
Okay, so I want to start with a little bit of the history. This whole notebook concept, even though it might feel new to the big data space, is actually not new. It's been around for almost 10 years with this project called IPython, which is now called Jupyter. Back in the day, this would be used by data scientists to analyze and slice and dice their data. It has a big community around it. It has a lot of following around it. It has a lot of development around it, both for visualizations, for model training, for all sorts of APIs. It's a very rich environment and ecosystem. The point that has made it reach this big data is mostly Spark. Spark now, with its interactive experience, it empowers this type of experimental phase where you can actually type in something and expect a response within seconds. Where in Hive or Hadoop, you know, these type of jobs will usually take a longer time to execute.
At least like three coffees.
Right.
Let it go.
This is where we get to what REPL means. So it's read, execute, print, and loop. You would normally have this experience in a command line interface where you'd be typing, you know, dir, you hit enter, you're typing something, it prints something, and then you start over again and execute commands as you go. If we go back to Hive, or if we go even back to Hadoop, this type of experience is not something that would be there. You would type something, go for your coffee, come back. Oh, now you've found out that you wanted a bigger value, you have to adjust, and you do it over again. And so that's why that notebook experience for those systems wasn't really there. It wasn't adapted. But now with Spark, we can then take the data scientist work that they've done already in the over the years and really apply it now with the tools that Spark brings to big data, and then reuse some of their visualizations and their modeling APIs that they've developed as well. So it's a great, exciting time to put all this stuff together. And that's kind of the historical background of these notebooks. Now, Zeppelin is a recent addition to the notebook experience. It is, as we mentioned, IPython grew on its own. It was more for data scientists to slice through smaller data sets. It's all written in Python. And Zeppelin came up as a tighter integrated notebook to Spark, given that this is just, it's tuned to create the context objects that you need for Spark, and it really abstracts away some of the artifact creation that you would normally go through if you were to build an application on your own. So it simplifies it a bit for you, it does some of the management for you, and it adds the visualization aspects of it in a way you don't have to think about. Mm-hmm. And so it provides a little bit of a better user experience. Not that Jupyter doesn't let you do that, it does, it's just a bit more work to get kind of the same results.
Sure.
And that's kind of the difference between them at this point.
Yeah, I love how in Zeppelin it's almost like you could just hand these off as reports to people who would want to see that data and interact, but we'll get to shortly here. Yes.
All right, well, if you don't mind, let's jump in and do some actual notebooking.
Yeah, let's do it. So let's lean over here and see what we got.
Yeah, so what we'll do, here we have the main Zeppelin interface. You have your create node, and there's also a dropdown that allows you to create node or access the notebooks, or the notebook list will also be here as well. The other thing I want you to focus on is on this connected dot, green dot over here. If it's red, it's bad. If it's green, obviously, it means good. It means that this front end that Zeppelin has is connected to its back end, which connects to the Spark master. We will also be looking mostly in the interpreter tab. And in the interpreter tab, let me talk first about what's an interpreter. Interpreters are standalone pieces of code that Zeppelin abstracts out that know how to talk to a backend. So there's lots of interpreter types. There's Spark. There's one that talks to Cassandra. There's one that talks to Hive. There's one that could talk to SQL directly. And so these guys have their own configurations that allow them to talk to their backend appropriately. So if you look at the Spark one, we see that it defines a Spark master, and this leads to how does Zeppelin talk to our Spark and our clusters. Zeppelin's installed as a service in the head node, and hence it's a component in the cluster. So it has direct access to the Spark master, and that's why we have to provide this this particular text that says head node host, and head node host resolves to the active head node on the HC Insight cluster. That way you don't have to say, is this head node 1 or head node 2? This will figure it
so
out.
So in
for
a
you.
Failover, everything continues to work just as you would expect it to always work.
Yes. The next thing we want to talk about is the name. And so if you were to go to the Spark UI to see your running applications, you'll see Zeppelin. And that's a good way for us to distinguish it. This is by default. You don't have to do any of this. This comes preloaded. But if you wanted to change this because you have more than one notebook or you just want to track it over time, you can definitely change this as well. The other part is the cores and the memory. Right now, our HC Insight cluster automatically adjusts these for you to provide a good experience across all applications. We have, you know, Jupyter, we have a job server, we have Spark itself. And so we wanted to have each application to have its own little bandwidth so that if people wanted to go play with all of them, they wouldn't be constrained with resources. So definitely, if you feel that, hey, I really don't care about the other things, I really just want to specialize and tune Zeppelin to work with all the resources of the cluster, you can definitely come here and tweak these numbers and increase them so that you get the best experience with your notebook. So with that in mind, let's jump into our sample, and we'll get a little creative with some of the content here. So let me walk you through the scenario. We touched a bit on it in the beginning. And this is more of an IoT company that sells sensors for buildings, temperature sensors. Mm-hmm. And here is the whole concept of a notebook. What I want you to see is that it's divided into a few sections. We have its title. There's a way for us to reproduce the cells below. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We can contract it such that, that doesn't do it. Oh, yeah, there you go. We can contract it such the code is hidden, and we only see the... There you go. We can only see the responses. So if you really don't care about what the code it's doing to show up, you just want a quick dashboard or report, that lets you do that. And there's a way to delete it, and there's a way actually to schedule it to run every so often. So those are kind of the over options for it. So again, there's the concept of a cell or node. And here you can paste one or n number of statements, in this case Scala, to run. And it's like a programming language such that each one of these cells is a statement. They'll be running sequentially. So this one first, then the next chart, then the next chart. So you can either spread all of these statements as individual cells, or you can group them all in one cell and just see the output of it. What we have here in the schema is that there is a timestamp, a date. We have the actual temperature, which is the temperature that the room where this sensor is installed in. Then we have a building reference so that we know where in the world this is. And then there's a target temperature, which is what the temperature should be based on what the thermostat is trying to heat. So that's kind of the base foundation. And we're creating a table called HVAC that has all this content. And we're reading, the other cool part is we're reading from Azure Storage directly from this CSV file. So we'll run this particular cell, and while it's running, we'll go ahead and insert a new node below, and we'll say percentage SQL. So this the statement above creates a table called HVAC, and so we're going to do a show tables and see if our table our new table shows up.
And so now you just switch programming languages directly in this notebook, one cell working against Scala, one cell working against SQL.
Right. Okay. So just by annotating, saying percentage SQL, show tables, we're telling it, hey, don't do Scala. Take a SQL-like language and interpret this, or pass it on to the interpreter that's associated with this annotation, which is the Spark SQL context. So it understands show tables. So we can see our tables there. It's all neat. Everything's happy. Hence, we can then go ahead and execute these other charts. Now, note that there already there's some data. This is because once you run a particular cell, its results are saved in the notebook. And so you don't have to rerun and say, for example, you want to do something internally and then take it out somewhere where you don't have particularly CorpNet access, or you just want to be able to take the results out. You don't have to rerun them every single time. You can cache them. People can see them, even if they're not connected to the original backend.
Cool.
So that provides us. Now, another thing that I want to showcase today is the concept of these active forms that Zeppelin has. So if you look at this particular query saying, hey, where the target temperature is 65. Now, that's good if I wanted to have an experience where people want to come and change the numbers. I would want to have it as maybe a drop-down or a cell that people can actually type in. So what people can do now, you can do a dollar sign this, and you can say temp equals and then 65. And by changing this format, we now get a box that allows us to type 75. So for a user that's coming in to change values, it's very obvious that this is the value that the author wants them to mess around with. And so here, if you want to go ahead and say 80 and run it again, then it will take on that value, and this chart will change based on that value that we specified here under temp. Now, the other cool thing is it doesn't have to be a single value. Maybe there is a sequence of values that you want to showcase because you've already gone through this, and you just want to provide a better experience for them to, rather than say you can type anything, here is a set of curated values that we know are interesting, so you can then start pivoting out. Oh, did I miss something?
Yeah, and so this is a great way for that the data analyst to pass this off to their business users and show them very easily, here's kind of your notebook. Feel free to play around in this notebook, but only kind of adjust to these 6 or 8 different values that we know are going to show data that you're interested in seeing. So that allows a little bit of the ability to kind of pass these notebooks directly on.
Yeah, so if you see here, you then get, if you specify 65, comma, and then pipe, you get a nice drop down. I know why this is there. You go ahead and do that. And then you'll get a nice drop down again with the values that you want, and you can then slice and dice based on that drop down of content that you want. So if you want to go now to 80, it'll automatically resubmit once you select that new value, and you will get the updated chart. So a really neat way for you as a developer to create a good, interesting report, not just that highlights the data, but then gives the reader of this report the flexibility to explore within the bounds that you've defined. I mean, they can still go ahead and do pretty much anything they would want,
yeah.
But here you're providing some guidance into the insights of the data itself.
Yep. Showing that chart with the data right there, right? So what is this graph showing us here?
So here we see the variance of temperature. Where the target temperature is greater than 80, and it's grouped by the, it's grouped by the target temperature itself. So we see how many groups we have on the 69 degrees. So it's 2.6 or around that, because we have an average temperature mm-hmm. as well. So it kind of spreads that love out. You can edit this to remove the groupings, and then you get a more traditional chart.
And that changes right there.
Yeah.
And so if you want to add variables to that, how do we go ahead and just add another variable in there? Is it you just type the name, or?
No, you can then.
Oh, it's a drag and drop right there.
You can just drag and drop, and you can see a split by dates. Some of these don't necessarily render best, because it tries its best to in the space that you have to showcase the data. But you probably can get to something that looks meaningful and nice and pretty mm-hmm. right off the bat without you having to think about how you're going to lay this down with a lot of complexity. Not just that. But you can also just go to a scatter form or some line charts, or even the raw data is so invaluable to be able to just see what data directly maps and be able to really filter out any noise that you might be seeing in the data itself.
Yep, cool. And all these visualization packages are built into Zeppelin and part of the Zeppelin project?
Yes, they're okay. just right off the bat. They're working on new ones, mostly tying some geolocation data so you can do maps.
Okay.
And they'll plot it out, you know, the US or the world. Those are some of the new things that are coming from Zeppelin directly. From our end, we see improvements into the experience in the sense of how you reach the notebook itself. Right now, there's a little hop process of going to one endpoint and authenticate, and then going to another endpoint and authenticating again. We're in our refresh going to fix all of that so that we have a really nice user experience. People don't have to authenticate all the time. We're going to add some security features that we know at least Zeppelin was lacking, and hopefully that will bring it more closer to an enterprise level.
Yeah, and there's a good chance that by the time these people were watching this video, that's already occurred,
yes,
right?
So, yes.
So you might be seeing those results and seeing these announcements at the same time as you're hearing us talk about it now.
Yes, and another big priority is for us to enrich these samples. They're, to a certain degree, a little simplistic. We really want to showcase the power of Azure ML, for example,
of course,
Jupyter.
Yeah, and we have some more sessions that in this same series here on Channel 9 that we're going to kind of dive deeper into what that looks like. Okay, so we just saw all that cool functionality of Zeppelin. So can we talk about now what's going to come next? What should we be expected to see from your guys' team over the next few weeks or right now?
In the next few weeks, as I mentioned, we want to make the experience of logging on to the notebooks better. Right now, we go to different ports and we do all these hops for security reasons that we had to rush through to get our first release out. We'll definitely be smoothing that experience to be seamless as it is right now to get to the cluster dashboard. You'll see, you'll get a URL from your cluster to say just /Jupyter/Zeppelin. And you'll be immediately connected to that notebook and be productive right off the bat. We will also be getting the latest bits from Zeppelin.
Okay.
These are almost 2-3 months old. So the community has made lots of cool investments like cloning notebooks. Before you would have to like copy paste. Now there's one button that says clone this, give it a name, you get it right off the bat.
Yeah.
They've addressed some of the connectivity issues that were native to Zeppelin. And remember, this is still an incubator project from Apache, so it has like it's probably like 8 or 9 months old.
Mm-hmm.
So getting those updates frequently is a big priority for us because we'll run into all of these glitches and bugs.
It's a very active project because it's still an incubation stage. It wants to graduate. We want it to graduate so that we can bring it in and get more of a regular update process.
Right. And
one thing we didn't talk about with Zeppelin and this kind of your integration of being able to clone notebooks reminded me is so right. When you have these notebooks and you're looking for a way to use source control, what's kind of the recommended route to take for that?
So that's the other thing we want to really address. As of right now, we have two different stories with each notebook. For Jupyter, it's kind of a no-brainer in the sense that it already has a file export, file import feature built in. So if you can export it, you can then do TFS, you can do GitHub, you can do whatever. Actually, GitHub is a really tight integration with Jupyter, mm-hmm. in the sense that if you check in a Jupyter notebook, it could preview it right there. If you click, you won't just see the JSON file, you actually see the whole rendered notebook. So that's really cool from them to have that integration. But from Zeppelin, there really is no export functionality, as we saw. There's really nothing to say, hey, get me my notebook or take this notebook. It's just create new or delete new or just rename them. What we'll do next is we'll create a really tight repository for WASP, mm-hmm. or Azure Storage, such that whenever you create a notebook, it'll create to Azure Storage directly.
Okay.
I know it's not necessarily a source control type of feature, but it at least gets you a way to extract your notebooks and have them sync in real time, such that if you were to back them up to TFS from your storage account and then rehydrate them back, then the cluster will read from it and
yeah.
you would just get those updates, and everyone would get those updates if they were all pointing to that same location. So I know it's not necessarily a source control solution, but it's a bigger step closer
yeah,
to that.
All things to come. I mean, Spark's still in preview, really new product for the HD Insight team, fairly new on the big data scene, few years, but in the scheme of things,
right.
fairly new technology, all all the bugs, still working through most of them.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Joel, thanks for your time.
No, thank you.
Appreciate you taking the time to come out and speak with me and everyone else. And I'm looking forward to getting to do this again. So
definitely.
Until next time.
Definitely. Please send us your feedback. We know the experience can only get better by people using it, and so we're really receptive for
so
it.
So what's your favorite way for people to contact you if they have questions?
You can contact me on Twitter, and you'll put it in the screen somewhere. So you can live chat on issues that you might have. There is the forum. I think that there's a way for us to...
User voice, right? Yeah. You guys have a user voice as well?
I think so.
Okay.
And... other than that, just hit me up there, and we'll be able to answer some of your questions.
Cool. Yeah. Again, this is Joel. I'm Andrew. I'm at Ask the Data. If you have questions, you can always route them through me as well, and I'll go knock on Joel's door, and we'll get those answered.
Great.
Awesome. Thanks for tuning in.